This is Barry Tyker of the University of Wisconsin Archives Oral History Project. Today is May 23rd, 1989. I'm at Vilas Communications Hall with Larry Halley. Larry served as manager of Badger Village University Housing Project from 1946 through 1951, and we're going to talk about his experiences during those years at Badger. Larry, maybe you could start out by talking about the actual opening of Badger Village, how the idea came into being, the principal people involved, and how and when it opened and where.
In early 1946, as veterans began to return to the campus in large numbers due to the GI Bill of Rights, for which provided educational support, it was very apparent to the university administration and to the Division of Residence Halls at that time that there was a serious housing shortage developing, and particularly for married students. Married students had never been thought to be a very significant group to house before World War II. Because due to the Depression in the years before that, people didn't get married until they could afford to support a wife, and women didn't work mostly, and so there were very few married students. But the veterans came back. Many of them were married or became married shortly after being discharged. They had, in essence, postponed their life, and they needed housing. And Madison was not equipped with enough apartments to take care of them. And since the, as the university struggled to find housing, they decided to use housing that had been developed for war plant purposes, and they obtained trailers from defense plants in Indiana and had them trucked up to Madison, where they placed them on Camp Randall, where the practice building is now, and that helped. But they also discovered that they could get the housing that was developed at the Badger Ordnance Works, 35 miles northwest of Madison, between Prairie du Sac and Baraboo. And however, they had to apply to the Public Housing Administration for a lease, and they obtained a lease for a nominal cost, because the war plant was in a maintenance situation, was no longer operating. And this began in the summer of 1946, although students had started to move in during the winter, when the Public Housing Administration had a small operation holding on to the place.
So Badger was essentially designed, opened for the married student, and that included children.
Oh, yes, but and particularly
context,
children.
Context. Say it again with context.
Yes, Badger Village was particularly useful because the housing could take children. And the problem, of course, existed for transportation because cars were not available. Automobile companies were still converting from military hardware, and so the university procured buses and began to operate a transportation system. And
before we get into the busing, let's go back just a little bit. Now, you joined the military in 1943. Tell us about your return to Madison and how you became involved with Badger.
I came back at the end of March of 1946, and my wife had remained in Madison during the World War II, living with three other nurses, and she was working at university hospitals. And when I came back, we didn't have any housing. And she found us a room on Gorham Street where we had to share the bath with five other students. And it was not very convenient. However, we were glad to be together. I stopped in shortly after I arrived to visit Don Halverson, the director of University Residence Halls, and Lee Burns, the associate director, having worked for them in 1942 and had corresponded with them during the war, and I stopped in just to visit. They welcomed me and said, "We'd like to have you go to work right now as the manager of Badger Village." And I said, "Well, I'm really intending to return to graduate school. However, it's at the middle of the semester. I'll talk to my wife and see. We need housing up there." They said, "Well, we'll throw in a two-bedroom house in addition to the salary." I said, "Well, that's attractive. I'll take a look at that and ask my wife." So we decided that she would go back to school because she had 1 year left to get her bachelor's degree, and we'd take the job at Badger, and I would work, and then when she graduated, she'd go back to work, and I'd go back to graduate school. However, it didn't work out that way. At the end of that year, I liked what I was doing, and she was pregnant. And so we decided we'd stay for a while. And I stayed there until we moved to Madison in late 1951.
Before we get into life at Badger itself, let's talk just a moment about Truax and about where the undergraduates were being housed after the war. Why don't you start with Truax first?
Well, at the same time that Badger was being developed for housing students, student families, Truax was badly needed for the overflow of housing, which for single students primarily, because the university residence halls at that time only consisted of Barnett and Chadburn, about 350 and altogether, and Elizabeth Waters, 500 women, again, women. And the men consisted only of about 640 at Cronsage and about 500 at Trippin Adams, woefully inadequate. The enrollment before World War II was about 12,000, and in the period of 1946 to 49, it grew up to over 19,000. And housing didn't develop accordingly. So the university was able to get a number of buildings at Truax Field. They got the hospital area, which they converted into small apartments for couples without children, took a little over 100, and they got the school buildings, classroom buildings, and they divided, they partitioned those to form dormitory rooms for four people, men only, and they ran the bus service into Madison from there also. And Truax ran through 1950.
Getting back to life at Badger, let's start out by talking about the veteran as a student. Start out with how serious they were.
Well, the veterans who had to postpone their education anywheres from 3 to 5 years were anxious to get their education, and they didn't want anything to interrupt that. And they were very serious. The university installed a 12-week summer semester, so they could go right through and not lose any time. They could take a full semester's work in the summer. And a lot of students did that. A number of the veterans who might not have been able to go to the university before World War II because of the Depression were now able to go to school, and they had worked and had working experience and were serious, and they put forth considerable effort. This was not a rah-rah campus at that time.
What about the applied versus practical, the types of courses they were interested in?
Well, they were interested.
Start out with the veterans.
The veterans, of course, having had some work experience in the Army, were interested in their work careers, and they were not necessarily interested in taking courses for their own personal information. They were interested in taking coursework which would be helpful to them in earning a living. There was a concentration in engineering and business, and those schools boomed.
How would you characterize these post-war students how would you differentiate them between the students who went to UW during, before World War II? You were there for both periods.
Well, these students were, again,
the veterans.
The veterans were more experienced and had lived under the military rules and regulations, and they were glad to have the freedom, and they were concerned that there be reasons for whatever rules and regulations existed. And consequently, the university administration had to take a good look at what rules and regulations existed, which had been designed at a different point in time. The university had at one point been considered itself in loco parentis, and the veterans didn't feel they needed the university as their parent, and they wanted to have some say in the way the university was being run, particularly the way their courses were being handled, and their teachers had to be able to produce worthwhile coursework.
Let's talk for a second about the professor. I've heard some interesting comments on that. How did the professor have to, a UW professor, have to typically readjust their class to the veterans? And can you think of any specific examples?
Well, they had to...
The professors
had to take a look at their coursework and recognize that these students, being very conscientious and having considerable experience, could cover more ground. And so they could go faster and could cover more ground. Otherwise, the students would start to complain about the courses being trivial. So the professors had to put more effort into designing their courses, and a number of them did.
Can you think of any incident in particular that sort of, that could characterize that?
I think the school.
Let me start. Okay.
In particular, I would say the journalism school was under considerable examination by students who enrolled there. And they had substantial reorganization of courses and programs.
Because?
Because the veterans were critical of the curriculum and felt that it was not sufficiently practical.
We talked. What about President Fred himself? Now he was the president of the university during these years. What was his involvement, if any, with Badger, and what kind of experiences can you relate to?
Well, both President Fred and his wife were very interested in the veteran students, and particularly the married students, and they paid several visits to Badger Village and made themselves available to the families and were very concerned that the maximum amount of support was given by the university to the veterans and their families. One time I remember, at the time that the Freds came to visit on a Sunday, they were touring the project, and they went into a room which had been set up as a sewing room and with sewing machines donated by the Red Cross. And President Fred sat down at a sewing machine and showed some of the wives that he knew how to do it. And he was interested in arranging for a nursery school to be instituted there, which was financed by the university. And this was another valuable thing for the families up there, because some of the wives had to work in order to support their husbands going through school, because the GI Bill, although helpful, couldn't pay medical bills.
What about any other? Was it common for faculty members to go out to Badger sometimes, and for what purposes might they go out there?
Well, faculty members occasionally came out to Badger, frequently upon invitation by the various organizations out there, to meet with students and discuss things of interest to them. The women, many of whom had university degrees, were interested in having some outside stimulation, and they had some programs where they had successive speakers, and they utilized the resources of the university faculty, and the faculty was glad to do this.
Let's turn now for a moment to the living quarters and living conditions. Let's describe what kind of living arrangement a typical veteran and his family had out at Badger.
Well, we had two types of housing at Badger. One was in the row houses, which had drywall partitions, and there wasn't any airspace between them. And one case where two families lived side by side and their dining room tables were against the common wall, one man asked his wife to pass the ketchup, and the family next door passed the ketchup to each other. It was very close living quarters. The rooms were very small. In the row houses, the heating, as designed by for the ordnance plant workers, consisted of a coal space heater and a coal cook stove. And students had no experience with those things, and they're not all that easy to operate unless you have had experience. So they they began to replace the coal space heaters with oil burners, oil space heaters, and they used hot plates and what a roaster called a Nesco roaster as cooking equipment. However, the apartments were not wired sufficiently for that type of electrical equipment, and we had a number of fires. And the hot water heater was a coil of piping inside the coal cook stove. And if you didn't use that, you couldn't heat hot water for your apartment. So they got another hot plate and strapped it underneath the hot water tank. And that was bad. And so the university came to the conclusion after several fires they had to do something. And so they spent about $50,000 to rewire the whole project and install bayonet electrical elements in all the hot water tanks. So it was then done thermostatically.
What about the second? You said the row houses were one type of housing. What was the second?
Well, there were barracks in so-called North Badger, which have since been converted to Bluffview, a retirement community. But those barracks had been designed for single people who would commute home on weekends. And we were able to get the barracks also, and we converted those to two-room apartments for families without children or with one child under two, only infants, because we had community bathrooms in there, because there wasn't room to put a bathroom in order to get the maximum number of apartments. And we had central heating there.
Approximately how many apartments were there, and what was the total population of Badger throughout the course of its existence?
We had a total of in round numbers, 700 apartments, and the population would run around 2,700, including children.
So it was really a small town.
Oh, yes. And
context.
This was a small town with 2,700 people, and the university assigned a policeman to work as part of our staff, part of my staff, I guess, the staff being very small. And because we depended on the ordnance plant for fire service, the federal government decided that we couldn't get fire service from the plant unless it was a reciprocal arrangement. So we took one of our pickup trucks and painted it red and put some fire extinguishers and hose on it. And we said we were prepared to help them if necessary. Fortunately, that situation never developed. And they helped us as we had a few fires. But we had to do whatever was necessary to keep the place going.
Now, in a town that size, I mean, we're talking about town again, with veterans who have just been off fighting a war and who are coming back to wives they might not remember or they never even knew, there must have been tension on the domestic front. You would almost think of that as just a natural byproduct of what's happened. Talk a little bit about that and what you and whatever staff you had and the members here of the Wisconsin Union did to help deal with that problem.
One of the problems that you would naturally face in a community of that size with a wide variety of people, and considering the fact that veterans had not really lived with their wives in most cases until recently, and they were thrown into a difficult situation. The husbands were under pressure to complete their academic work. They had to ride an hour each way to and from the campus, And it was difficult. And the wives who were home had to wrestle with children under difficult conditions. It was hot in the summer and cold in the winter. And there was no basements, and the wind would blow right through. The living conditions were Spartan. And under those circumstances, tempers would get short. And we had occasional domestic problems. Surprisingly few, considering the circumstances. But nevertheless, we had some. And the policemen occasionally helped people get hold of themselves. Because I knew a lot of the people personally, because of frequent contact, was able to help. There were, at the university, the Memorial Union provided some help also. We didn't have quite the counseling staff the university has today. But the only incident that I can recall that got to a fairly serious point was when two small children got into an argument during the day, and both wives got the fathers to attack each other when they got home. This ended up at the Justice of the Peace office, and the Justice of the Peace was a law student who lived in the project. He wasn't able to get the things straightened out, so at 1 o'clock in the morning they called me, and I came down, and I got him in the office and said, "Look, tomorrow those two kids will be back playing together. Go home and don't get excited over something like that." They were tired enough to do that. So that was one of my successful counseling efforts.
Did the children indeed play with each other?
Sure they did. The children actually did what I thought they might do, which is fairly typical of children. They went back and played together the next day.
You talked a little bit about the seasonal variations. Let's talk about the grounds that surrounded the row houses and whatnot. What were they like?
Well, because transients had been living in them, they had done nothing.
Not them. Start over.
The grounds were somewhat planted to grass, but they were pretty bare. And transients having lived in them, they did nothing to improve them. The students did try, those who were staying for longer periods of time, to plant some shrubbery, which helped. But when it rained, and we got some heavy rains at times, it was very muddy. There weren't any curbs or gutters. And there was a lot of empty ground, and it was difficult. And in the summer, I know one time we had a very bad wind, almost of tornado strength, and it lifted the roof right off of six apartments. And when I saw that happening, I called Gallagher Tent and Awning in Madison, and I rented all of the canvas that Gallagher had and sent a truck down to Madison immediately to bring it back. And by nightfall, we had all of those apartments covered temporarily until we could re-roof them. And we were putting a lot of lumber into those projects, into those row houses, because the floors were plywood, and the previous tenants had spilled a lot of water on them, and they were disintegrating. We were buying plywood by the carload, freight carload, and 2x6s by the carload. And we bring the freight cars in on a siding in the ordnance plant, and then we truck it over from there.
I'm going to just ask something that I was going to ask you later on. We'll still get to the different elements of the town, the stores and everything, but this seems to be a good point to ask about the spirit of Badger. Now, you're talking about roofs being peeled off of houses. You're talking about, I know there were some very cold winters, wet summers, and difficult conditions. Talk a little bit about the spirit of the veterans and the lives and the families that lived through these experiences.
Despite the adverse living conditions, it was amazing to see how well the great majority of people got along. There was a strong group feeling. They were all in the same boat together, and they helped each other. They all recognized that this was extremely necessary, because, again, of the conditions they had to live under. And it was very interesting to see. People made long-time friends. And even today, almost 50 years later, friendships that were made there are still continuing. And the experience, I think, was a valuable one, because people developed a great deal of self-confidence, I think, by being able to overcome the obstacles that they had to overcome to live there.
Now, you've said that I know that you have kept contact with many of these people, many of them here in Madison. And I suspect that you've talked, you've reflected with them on their years. Today, as you said, 50 years later, how are they viewing their experiences today at Badger?
Well, those that I have talked to...
Those people.
Those students who lived there that I've talked with feel that it was a very valuable experience. Albeit a little painful at the time, it was a valuable experience, and they enjoyed the people that they lived with among.
Okay, let's go to Badger as a small town. Obviously, it's more than houses. You've got 3,700, is that it?
No, 2,700.
I'm sorry, 2,700 people and all these different apartments. Talk about how things... Let's start with the stores. How did the stores come about, and what types of stores were there and available to the people?
At Badger Village, when the ordnance plant was in operation, a store facility was built, a commercial building, was built along with a school to serve a community. And because it was really 6 miles from the closest town, and transportation wasn't all that available, particularly under gas rationing. So there was a supermarket there, AMP ran it, and a drugstore, which was a contract operation, a post office, a barber shop, and this generally served the needs of the community. People didn't have to go into town to shop for the necessities. However, the university did run... The bus service ran Saturday morning shopping trips to Prairie du Sac and Sauk City and to Baraboo for those people that wanted to shop in those communities.
Any relation to the farmers in the area?
The stores also were utilized by the rural people who lived in the vicinity, and they were, of course, welcome. the school itself was under the school board for the township of Sumter. This was school district, I believe, number two, if my memory is correct. And so those parents who had children of school age, beyond nursery school, were being taken care of by the local school district. And the principal of the school who had served during the war continued on at least a part-time basis, because he also sold Encyclopedia Britannica.
What about doctors and dentists?
The university, as part of its support of the community, provided a part-time doctor who was a resident at the university in the medical school, and a full-time nurse who had an office in the school. And that helped people in emergencies. The people also were able to use the local doctors in Baraboo and Sauk and Prairie, as well as dentists. The Badger Christian Fellowship conducted church services in the community building, which is where my office was. And we also converted the auditorium between church services to a gymnasium, and there was an intramural basketball league there. And we had movies on Friday and Saturday night. The university built a small projection booth in the auditorium of the community building. The university encouraged the students living there to form a council to represent them in not only dealing with the university, but to provide some extracurricular activities and some recreation for the people in the village. And to finance the council, the university gave the council one large room in the community building, where they installed billiard tables and a small bar to serve beer and soft drinks. And with the revenue, they were able to develop a reasonable social program, such as the fireworks on the 4th of July and some children's activities, and and they had dances. So there was some social life, and which helped again make the area more comfortable for people to live in. And after a while, it didn't seem so barren anymore.
Who were some of the students who attended Badger, the students and their wives?
There are some students who today are in Madison yet, or at least in Wisconsin that I know, and who are pretty well known. One of whom...
No, you context. Who attended Badger?
And these students were all residents of Badger Village while I was the manager. One of these students was former president of the university, Edwin Young. And there were two former governors, John Reynolds and Lee Dreyfus, and the present Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Wisconsin, Nathan Heffernan. There are some of the faculty members, present faculty members, also were residents then. It was a very...
Nick, why don't you name some of those faculty members?
It was a very vigorous group of students, and generally a very strong academic group of students.
Okay, we have Badger opening in 1946. The year has passed. Badger, how long was Badger supposed to be open for again?
You mean when it...
When they opened Badger, what were they projecting in terms of how long it should stay open, and what actually happened, in fact?
The university intended, when they opened Badger, that it would remain open perhaps 3 or 4 years until the peak of the enrollment had passed, and building in Madison caught up. However, building in Madison didn't catch up that fast, and the enrollment didn't slow down that quickly. Furthermore, living at Badger was very inexpensive. Many of the veterans paid only $18 a month rent, and the maximum was about $26.50. And you couldn't touch that in Madison. And while admittedly there were some hardships in living there, once you got used to it, it was pretty reasonable. And again, as the social activities and recreational activities increased, it became a reasonably attractive place to live. You could raise a garden across the other side of the highway where the ordinance plan allowed us to plant gardens, and so it was a pretty reasonable thing. And students decided we don't want to move until we finish our careers, our academic work. And of course, the manager of the bus operation started in as a freshman and finished with a law degree and a bachelor's in economics. And he lived the entire time there, and there were a number of other students whose graduate work took longer, and so they all stayed. So students were still living there in 1951 when the Korean War required that the ordnance plant be opened to produce powder. And at that point, the federal government decided they wanted to take back the housing. So we had to terminate our lease in 1951 with the agreement that students could remain who were there until they moved out or finished their careers, whichever happened last. And so I continued to go. I moved out myself in the fall of 1951, but I maintained my contact 3 days a week with the students until June of 1952. And at that point, the university finished its connection with the project, and any students that lived beyond there that time did so under the federal government arrangements. Some of the students went to work at the ordnance plant at that point because they were paying good wages.
It sort of sounds like students, maybe I'm misreading you, but students actually might have had a say in how long the ordnance stayed open. It wasn't strictly a university decision saying let's close at 19 whenever.
Well, the... Badger stayed open as long as there was a reasonable demand for it by students. And this, as I have indicated, it continued reasonably strong up to 1951. At that point, we still had a full house, But the Korean War started, and that and the federal government decided that they to reopen the Badge Ordnance Works, and then they wanted the housing back. They didn't really intend to use the housing when they got out in 1946, but they didn't intend to have the Korean War either. Now, the students didn't want to be abandoned, however, in 1951, and so they made a strong case for being able to remain during a conversion period, and so we were able to get the federal government to agree to that.
Going back to something that I just wanted to see if you could shed any light on, especially in light of what's going on today. The post-war years, we began to see a whole new clientele, as you said, come into the university community. What about minorities? Were there any at Badger? And what about the role of women in terms of as students as opposed to the traditional role of housewives? Let's start with minorities first.
I can't remember offhand that we really had any minorities as residents, although we had some wives who were from foreign countries, Philippines for one. If you want to consider them to be minorities, it was difficult to tell in that we didn't ask questions about race on the application.
Was it against the law to do that, or did you just not do it?
We just didn't do it. I don't know whether it was against the law or not, but we didn't do it. I don't think it was against the law, but we didn't do it. I think the university has long had a non-discrimination policy.
Just in terms of within the Badger Ordinance itself, I'd never really thought of this till this moment. Were there any divisions between the veteran residents, between like those who had fought on the Pacific Front, those who had fought on the German Front, those who had been combat, and those who had been non-com? Was any of that an issue in any way at all?
The veterans who came back and lived at Badger, to the best of my knowledge, never got into any particular discussions or controversies concerning where they served during the war, or even what rank they were. There may have been a few individuals who had some feelings along those lines, but I didn't know about it, and it certainly didn't become a significant question amongst the people.
Let's look for just one second at, again, we have this whole village of 2,700 people. What did the veterans wear upon their return? Were they still in khaki, essentially?
If we look at the clothing situation, for instance, the veterans wore a lot of their military clothes. I had my ODs dyed navy blue, so I could wear them with gray pants or gray shirts. And clothes were not all that easy to get in the first year. In fact, I was walking on one of my weekly trips to Madison. I was walking in front of the Memorial Union, and Bill Purnell came by, who owned McNeil and Purnell's store on men's store on State Street, clothing store, and he he came over and whispered to me, "We just got some shirts in, hurry." And I rushed over. I didn't ask him what color they were. I rushed over to get a civilian shirt. He was limiting it to 3 shirts a person. It took a while to fill the pipelines. And so you wore what you had. If you had any clothes left over from the before you went into the military service and they fit, you wore those. Clothing wasn't all that important as long as you could stay warm. But it didn't take too long. I think after about a year, it was you could get a reasonable amount of stuff. I ordered a car in 1946, and I got it in 1949. And again, I didn't ask what color it was, and I was just glad to get it. So it was surprising. This country had been at war for almost 5 years, and all of the manufacturing resources had been utilized for the military, virtually. And you had several million men and women in the armed forces, and they took a lot of stuff. And war is wasteful anyhow.
Ralph, I've asked what I have to ask. Is there anything you'd like to throw in?
Could you say anything more about the dances they had there?
The dances?
Yeah, in particular, I have a tape, and I also noticed in this material that you gave me that Don Bagley was out there.
Don Bagley?
The Bagley.
Okay.
He had an orchestra. He also worked for WHA.
Oh, okay. That's where we go. That's where Ralph's coming from. Yeah. Why don't you talk a little bit about that, and vaguely, if you can remember that specifically.
I think I mentioned a few minutes ago that about the social life at Badger. Now, there were a number of dances held because, particularly in the winter, they were popular, and they were of the cabaret type. The veterans were old enough to drink, and so they had they'd like to have a cabaret affair with tables and beverages available. And I believe that one of the popular orchestras at that time was Don Vagley's orchestra in Madison, and they would come out and play for some of these dances. And they were very popular.
Do you remember any, I'm going to tax your memory here, do you remember any particular songs they played? No. You see, what Ralph's going to do is he's going to have you mention this, and then when you say that on the program, then he'll probably bring the orchestra in, if I know him. Anything else you want to sneak in there?
He'll have to wing it, because, well, I remember Don, and I just can't remember the songs. And
well, it's not exactly fair to ask somebody to remember songs from 50 years ago, but I thought maybe there was one that just sort of stuck out. Anything else, Ralph?
That's fine.
Okay. How about you, Larry? Any closing comments you want to make?
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered the thing pretty well. I guess that's if you're satisfied, I am.
I'm satisfied if Ralph's satisfied. Now, Ralph, you got to say I'm satisfied if Larry's satisfied. Then we're all...
That's enough
cycle,
of that.
The cycle is complete.